Before we begin today's show, I want to tell you about my pal Scott Van Pelt, who in my opinion is pound for pound one of the nicest people at ESPN. And on top of that, one of the most talented people at ESPN. You don't need me to tell you about Scott Van Pelt. He is a legend. But I want to tell you about his brand new podcast. It's called the SV Pod. If you like listening to shows about sports, gambling, or just total nonsense, check it out. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts, and it's a phenomenal listen. Anything this man does is great, and that includes his brand new podcast. Check it out. All right, let's do it. Back in your life on this Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well. Cloudy, kind of gray Wednesday here in New York City, but I'm excited. It's a big day for me here at ESPN, at the ESPN Seaport Studios, doing this show first for all of you, then doing Ariel and the Bad Guy, and then making my co-hosting debut on the Will Cain Show. So if you're listening to this in the vicinity of 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, or even afterwards, you can go back and listen to the podcast. I will be on with Jason Fitz talking about like real sports, non-MMA things, baseball, basketball, football. Who knew? Who knew this could happen to little old me? So I'm very excited about that. Packed day, jam-packed day. And of course, we have a lot to talk about as far as MMA is concerned because it's UFC 247 fight week. It's the return of Johnny Bones Jones this Saturday, Houston, Texas, against Dominic Reyes, up-and-comer, 12-0, rising star. Can he be the one to unseat John Jones? And John Jones is on the verge of history. And I don't feel like this is being talked about enough going into this fight. John Jones right now is tied with George St. Pierre for the most amount of wins in a UFC title fight. 13. 13 UFC title fight victories. They both have 13. He wins this fight on Saturday, of course, 14. And then he'll stand alone. And I think that's a really big deal. And I don't feel like that's being celebrated enough. And it makes you wonder, of course, how far along would he be had he not gone into the legal issues, the PED issues, all that stuff and more. But the fact that he is still here almost 9 years exactly, 9 years in March, to when he first won the belt, youngest champion, 23 years young, against Shogun Hua, UFC 128, Newark, New Jersey. The fact that he is still the champ is pretty amazing. So we'll talk a lot about that fight and this card coming up on Saturday. Later in the program, Mark Raimondi of ESPN, who's already in Houston, will stop by, set the scene for us. I believe this is his first time in Texas, which kind of blows my mind. I mean, the guy is from New York, lives in LA. How's this the first time in Texas for you? But anyway, we'll talk to him about that. And then in the middle portion of the show, we're going to talk to Dan Henderson, the legend himself. Dan Henderson, former multiple-time Pride champion, UFC contender, all that stuff and more. We're going to talk to Dan Henderson, who I have not talked to in maybe 4 or 5 years. And I don't think a lot of people realize this. Dan Henderson has been training Dominic Reyes for this fight. And we all recall UFC 151 way back in the day. It was supposed to be Hendo versus Bones, Labor Day weekend, 2012. Henderson gets injured. They offer John Jones on 10 days notice, Chael Sonnen. John says no. First time in UFC history, they have to cancel the card. Dana White says that, you know, this was a very selfish decision on his part, on the team's part. And they never actually fought. They did compete against each other at a Submission Underground event several years later, coincidentally promoted by Chael Sonnen, but they'll always be intertwined. And I think it's fascinating that two UFC legends, Dan Henderson and Joe Stevenson, are training Dominic Reyes for this fight. But first, as you may know, I was just in Albuquerque, New Mexico, late Thursday night, Friday, to interview John Jones. I love going to Albuquerque. I haven't been there very much over the last few years. In fact, the last time I was there was November of 2015 after the hit and run accident, and we did that interview walking around in the park. But I find John Jones's relationship with Albuquerque and the whole Jackson Wink team relationship with Albuquerque, because they don't have a pro sports team, I find it fascinating because they kind of are the pro sports team in many respects. And John said something to me in that interview, which we aired on Monday. He said something when I was talking to him about his recent legal issue about Holly Holm still being the most popular athlete in Albuquerque. And that made me think of our next guest, who the last time I spoke to him was when Holly Holm beat Ronda Rousey in the aftermath of that victory and how big of a deal that was. And remember the parade, and she was just celebrated like no other American MMA fighter before after winning a big fight. Had a great reporter from the Albuquerque Journal named Jeff Grammer join the show, the Monday show, to talk about how big of a deal that win was for Albuquerque and for Holly Holm. And so now here we are about 5 years later. Wanted to have Jeff back on the program to talk about John Jones's relationship with Albuquerque. And if, in fact, his statement is true all these years later, despite the fact that Holly is no longer a champion and he's still on top. So without further ado, let's say hello now to Albuquerque Journal's own Jeff Grammer, who covers all kinds of sports for that paper. Kind enough to join us on this Wednesday. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And full disclosure for everyone, we happened to run into each other just a couple of weeks ago at UFC 246. Maybe the first time we've met in person, maybe the second time. You were there covering some college basketball, but you were able to also cover 246, so it was great to catch up. And I did really think of you when I was there last week and talking to John about Albuquerque and whatnot. And so let me ask you off the bat, is that in fact a true statement? Is Holly Holm still a lot more popular than John Jones in Albuquerque, despite the fact that John is still a champion?
Without question. Holly's place, and we'll talk a little more about John's place in this state and in this city in particular. Holly's place in this city is really unique. It's fascinating to me. She is the queen of Albuquerque. She could run for office. She'd win. She has a special place in a lot of people's heart, and there's probably a lot of even non-sports dynamics that go into that, I guess. But she's beloved here. When she beat Ronda, as you alluded to, you know, they had a parade for her. They had a big party down at Civic Plaza in downtown Albuquerque, and there could be some different emotions in my mind with this. I have a daughter that just loves Holly Holm, and you know, growing up, and she doesn't know what Holly even does. I don't even think she realizes Holly is a fighter and does that. She does now, but when Holly beat Ronda, she just knew, man, that Holly Holm, she's from here. And and that daughter also has another interesting connection that I think we'll probably touch on with John Jones,
yeah,
and his daughter. But it's fascinating to watch the Holly Holm part of Albuquerque. She's beloved. She can do no wrong. She certainly carries herself in a way that brings a lot of that on. And people that may not even like fighting or not pay attention to it, she certainly brings out something, I think, in people that just makes it her easy to like.
It's amazing. I walked off the airplane on Thursday night at the Albuquerque airport, and they call it a sunport. By the way, why do they call it a sunport and not an airport without getting too off track?
No idea. Born and raised in New Mexico, I couldn't even tell you.
Okay. It's interesting, but that's cool. Sunport is cool. And there's a big kind of painting of Holly Holm right as you walk off the plane at this one restaurant over there, which I then came to find out that her agent Lenny Frescas owns, and now it kind of makes a little more sense, but I don't think anyone bats an eye because of the reasons that you just laid out. So how does Albuquerque feel about John Jones?
It's different, that's for sure. I don't think New Mexico is a prideful state. A lot of states are, I get that, but New Mexico, not a lot of money. A lot of people have grown up here with families, you know, years and years and hundreds of years for a lot of families here. Very prideful state. We give Colorado to the north a lot of grief when they think their chili's better than ours, and we give Texas, you know, to the east a lot of grief when they spell chili with an I because they don't even know real chili, as anybody listening should know, is the green and red peppers, and it's spelled with an E at the end, just so you know. It's not chili with an I at the end. We get mad about things like that. We get mad about people coming and taking shots at our athletes and our people and this and that. And, you know, Holly's one of ours, and John Jones is a guy who came from another state and moved here and has had an interesting, as you know, well, far better, you know, more documented than I could ever do, even at the Journal, because I'm not primarily a fighter or reporter, I'm sorry. His rise to success has had all those kind of sidebar moments that have made New Mexico, I think, at times reluctant to embrace him. This is a state that loves its fighting. It's a combat state. It's a fight state. It loves fighters. And Johnny Tapia there's parks here in Albuquerque named after Johnny Tapia. And the troubles and tribulations that Johnny Tapia went through, in some respects, people could argue, are worse than what John did. Both were destructive. Both were had self-destructive moments and tendencies with the alcohol abuse or drug, you know, issues and stuff like that. But Johnny, I think, was always embraced a little bit more because he was from here and he was one of our own. But you know, Johnny also did prison time. Johnny also had a history of domestic violence and stuff like that. So it's interesting that he's so beloved here, and John, there was a reluctance to embrace him. But I will say this, John hasn't gone anywhere. After the hit and run, which was years ago now, several years ago anyway, he could have easily gone back to New York. He could have easily just come here and trained like a lot of fighters do. There are a lot of fighters that have come through the Jackson Wink doors that do their camp here and then go back home, which is fine. Everybody's from somewhere, you know, everybody lives somewhere. But John has chosen to make his life here. He lives here. He doesn't just parachute in for camps. This is where he lives now, and I think it might have taken a while, but I really do think John Jones is starting to become embraced a lot more by this community, and I think that he probably slowed that progress down himself with all his issues, but I do think New Mexico is starting to embrace John Jones a lot more than I would have said just a few years ago.
Was there a feeling 2015, 16, 17, in the midst of that really bad stretch, starting with the hit and run and then the other legal issues, the PED issues and whatnot, was there a feeling amongst the community like we kind of just want this guy to leave? He's misrepresenting us? Yes?
Yeah, absolutely there was. In fact, I think I can't remember the exact language, but we had a column in our paper in the Albuquerque Journal, and of course columns can come from all different perspectives and opinions, but we had a column in our paper with somebody basically saying, look, you're embarrassing our state. And if you're not one of us, you don't get to embarrass our state like that. And Jackson Wink should cut ties with you. And it wasn't something I wrote. I sort of have a different perspective on John. I think that there may be a soft spot and maybe even to a certain extent a blind spot because our daughters went to school together. And that experience has sort of maybe created a different perspective in my mind of John. But, yeah, absolutely there were people saying, John, enough. Look, man, you've embarrassed our state enough. You don't get to come in from some other state and make New Mexico look bad by doing this. And there were people saying such things. I don't think a lot of that were people that are around the training that he does and know that he lives here year-round, that he wasn't just kind of parachuting in and dropping in for camps. Like, he does make his home here. And I don't think those opinions were necessarily shared by people who know him. And as you know, in this fight community, look, John's a polarizing guy, and his sincerity is in question all the time. People always wonder, is he even being honest right now? Is everything so calculated? Because it frankly comes across as so. So I think people have a hard time trusting him. But the guy is a New Mexican at this point. He's lived here long enough. He spent a decade raising his family here, and his daughters are growing up in Albuquerque schools. And at some point you become a New Mexican. And I think John is there. And I think the community is accepting that. But I'll tell you, man, a few years ago there were more than a few that were like, look, man, just get out of here. You're not one of us and you're embarrassing us.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. I'm just coming from a school play, excuse me, that my son had. And, you know, so when you talk about, you know, having a daughter in the same class as his and you get to see parents in a different light, did you get to see a different side of John Jones? Like, would he come to these school functions? Would you see him there? And is he just a regular guy, or does everyone treat him differently?
First of all, both. My daughter, you know, full disclosure, and I've told this story to a few people publicly, so it's not some big secret, but my daughter and his daughter were really good friends in kindergarten and first grade, same age. My daughter's a little younger, but anyway, same grades. And then they went to a different school after, I think, first grade. But yeah, I mean, Jesse and their daughters are still to this day friends with my daughter, and they see each other at Target. I know my wife and daughter saw them just last week or a couple weeks ago now at Target and talked forever. So I remember when our daughters were in school. First of all, in kindergarten, there was a group of four girls did talent show together, and one was John's oldest daughter and one was my daughter. And we have this picture of them at this talent show, and John's daughter's tall and my daughter looks a lot more like a sports writer who couldn't do any sports and was very unathletic. And you ever want to be humbled, let me tell you, man, just go watch, you know, your daughter play tag at recess with John Jones' daughter and realize man, I did not give you a full deck of cards to play with. Like, she, my daughter knows no different. She doesn't realize that, but it's funny because I'm sitting here writing in the sports section every day about athletes in this town, and this was really the first time I had a connection beyond just me writing about them. I really try and take an approach to tell stories as opposed to tell what happened in a game or in a fight or whatever. You know, this is 2020, and at this point, people can look on their phone and see the score of a game or see who won a fight. You're trying to tell the stories of these people. And I really think about 4 or 5 years ago when they were in school together, I kind of took on a whole different understanding or appreciation maybe or just an awareness of these are people. Because I saw John. Look, Jesse took the kids to school most every morning. They were probably on different schedules, but I would take my daughter to school one morning after not figuring out how to even put her hair in a ponytail. And I remember thinking, man, John Jones, this guy on this pay-per-view right here, is doing the same thing. You know, come Monday morning, he's probably trying to figure out how to put his daughter's hair in a ponytail. Now, I don't know if any of that's true or not, but I remember thinking those thoughts and maybe giving him a little bit more benefit of the doubt. And I remember going to, like, a dance that the elementary school had for, you know, very informal. It wasn't like some big get dressed up kind of prom type thing, but they had a dance for all grades. And John was there. And as far as how other people treat him, I remember people, you know, wanting his time and taking him away from the dance. You know, the parents are in there kind of chaperoning, just watching their kids dance like crazy in this room. And everybody wanted a piece of John's time. So that I remember being difficult to watch because he wasn't sitting there enjoying the moment quite as all the other parents were. And then I think I've told you, I'll tell this other story. Right after Holly beat Rhonda in Australia, that was in November of, what was that, 15, I think, 2015,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that was November. And I remember around that time, I'm sitting at a tiny table in a tiny chair for elementary school Thanksgiving lunch with our kids. You know, parents get invited to do those Thanksgiving meals. And I'm sitting there with John and his daughters are sitting there at the table with me and my daughter. And we're sitting there talking a few days after the fact, I believe it was, about Holly Holm, who he loves, just a sister to him here in Albuquerque, and he loves Holly. And I'm sitting here talking to John Jones about the fight that Holly just had with Ronda Rousey, which is an experience that obviously is pretty unique, I think, to people. While our kids are around, at a very unguarded situation that John had, and he wasn't on. You know, he wasn't, when you interview him or I interview him or anybody interviews him or cameras are around, he's on. He tries to be very guarded and protected and all that. But around his kids, I just saw a different guy a little bit. And it wasn't that he was much different, but you could just tell he's not thinking as much about how to be calculated about what to say. And I think since then, I've probably given him the benefit of the doubt maybe more than most people around here. But what I will say is over the last few years, the guy gets out in the community, and I really think he's a part of New Mexico and a part of Albuquerque as much as just about anybody at this point. And I think he wants to help this community. I don't know if he always knew how to manifest that into action, but I think he's now starting to get a little more organized with all that. And I think he is starting to do things in the community that will make New Mexico embrace him even more. He'll never be Holly. I think Holly's at a whole other level, and that's just, you know, another story. But I do think New Mexico is starting to embrace John a lot more than they ever did.
Yeah, and he had that great scene during Christmas where he rented this big truck and gave out coats and whatnot. So it was good to see him do that. And it does seem, to me at least, like he really wants to be a part of the community and wants the community to be proud of him. And last year was an interesting one because first half of the year, like he's active, he's winning fights and all that stuff. And, you know, he's fighting on International Fight Week. And I think that's symbolic because Dana White at one point was very mad at him and said he'd never headline a show with him ever again. And so that's great.
Yeah.
And then literally a couple of weeks later, we get this story about, you know, this incident at a gentleman's club and they couldn't find him. And we come to find out, you know, several months later, he pleads no contest. And this is kind of, I almost feel like the MMA community is numb to it. Like if it's another fighter, it's a big deal. But when it's John, it's like, this is just another thing. I'm wondering in Albuquerque, when that story came out, was it a really big deal? Like, oh God, here we go again. Or are the residents of Albuquerque and New Mexico, are they just kind of numb to it as well? And it's no longer a big thing when he's in trouble.
No, I think they, you know, there is probably a certain amount of numbness to it. But no, it still made the news on all the TV stations here and certainly in our paper. And it was more of the same in some people's mind and some eye rolling to it. But I do think that was one that from the start, maybe people either didn't pay as close attention to it, certainly as the hit and run, or maybe they just didn't care as much. That one didn't have the traction that the past incidents did, which was interesting because in this modern age of social media, everybody I think follows stuff like crimes or allegations like that a little bit more with sports figures than ever before, which is, you know, going back to Johnny Tapia, if he grew up in this social media age, who knows how beloved he would be in New Mexico. It could have been a totally different story, but I digress. The John Jones situation at the Gentlemen's Club at TD's here in Albuquerque, I don't think people either cared as much about or maybe they had become numb to it because it wasn't just a blip on the radar, but it didn't have the traction in terms of interest or coverage here that the other cases did. So I don't know what that speaks to. I don't know if that's a we don't care at this point just because we're totally numb to it, or people just didn't think that was a story or a case or an allegation that had the legs to it that maybe the other ones did.
So here we are talking on a Wednesday before one of his fights, and I still feel like it's a big deal when he fights. Arguably the greatest ever, and like I said at the top, he can make history on Saturday. It still feels special when you get to see him fight because, honestly, who knows how long we'll get to see him fight, especially at the top in his prime. How big of a deal, you know, on the sports scene, I know you say that, you know, MMA isn't necessarily your beat per se, but in the newsroom, in the community, how big of a deal is it when John Jones is fighting? How big of a deal is it right now, 3 days before the fight?
It's big. I mean, he'll be on the front of our sports section, the rest of the week. He's already been there. I think John Jones still moves the needle here. I think the UFC recognizes that. I think I mentioned that to you a few weeks back, that the UFC's always been very kind, frankly, to the Albuquerque Journal and the Albuquerque media market in general, because per capita, one of the best pay-per-view buys cities in the country and in the world, probably, for that matter, has always been Albuquerque. Now, we're not a huge population base, but like I said, per capita, people buy fights here, and that goes for boxing, certainly. But with the Jackson Wink, you know, the rise of Jackson Wink through the years, that certainly translated to MMA buys as well. So this is a community that loves its fights, and this is a community that certainly recognizes greatness in combat sports, and John Jones is that. So yeah, it's a big deal. There will be watch parties, there will be bars and even local casinos right out on the outskirts of town anyway, that sell out theaters and bars for John Jones fights. Now again, the Holly fights always pack the place and do great too, but John will have watch parties all over town from people here in Albuquerque that know greatness and know John is that.
And when people see him around town, when people talk to him, when people talk about him, you get the sense slowly but surely that they're starting to believe he's a changed man, that the troubles are behind him, or is it kind of a wait-and-see approach at this point?
You know, it's interesting. First of all, I don't know. I do see him in the community. You know, he doesn't hide. He goes out to the grocery store. He goes out to stores, and I cover Lobo basketball, which is a big deal here in Albuquerque, and he goes to games and gets cheered wildly. You know, I mean, people love him, and I don't think, first of all, I don't think people that do hate him or do have a problem with him are going to go up in public and say anything about it. There might be some of that maybe in bar scenes or something like that, which he tends to, as far as I'm told, avoid a little bit more than he ever did in his life. There might be some people that want a piece of him in those kind of settings, but you know, he's going out to the grocery store. He's going out in the community. He's doing things that people go up and hug him and say, "Go, you know, hey champ," whatever, all those kind of things. So I think in those settings, he's really embraced. But I don't know, to your question about are people in this wait and see mode. I think there might be a mode of like that's John at this point, and some people just don't care. Some people love him anyway. You know, that's where I think maybe the evolution of Albuquerque embracing John is. Is that, you know, a lot like the Johnny Tapia, like, we get that he has warts, and we get that he has flaws, and he certainly hasn't ever denied that he is no perfect person. But I think there's an awareness and maybe an acceptance that this guy is 32 years old and through his 20s made a lot of stupid decisions and mistakes in his life that were big time, not just minor mistakes, but he made some pretty major mistakes that were embarrassing to him and maybe embarrassing a little bit to the community. But I think people understand that this guy, you know, we just accept that is the guy who is now trying to maybe better himself. Whether or not you believe he is trying to better himself is up to you. But I think that this community is one now that embraces the fact that he's a local champion and he is doing things in this community. And that goes a long way. He's not just hiding out, you know, in his house somewhere, and he's not just flying out after camps. This guy's doing the coach thing over the winter. This guy helps, he does a lot of help with homeless people in the downtown area and stuff like that. And I do think that his mom's influence sort of guides him down this path where he wants to do something. I just don't know if he always understood how to do that. And I think that there's a lot to be said for the acceptance he's starting to get now, I think, over the last several years, in fact, in New Mexico, just because he does the right things here in the community. I'm not talking about the fight scene and some of the things he says that people still attack all the time in terms of hyping up a fight or you know, his social media interactions with people. I'm just talking about here in this community, he's starting to do the right things that people, I think, are recognizing.
Fascinating insight, Jeff. I really appreciate it. His Twitter handle, by the way, is at GEOFFGRAMMER, Jeff Grammer of the Albuquerque Journal. I really appreciate you coming on. Great to have you on the show again. And thanks for taking out some time. I know you guys are busy over there, so we really appreciate you coming on.
No, I appreciate you, too. I want to pick your brain sometime about maybe the outside view of Albuquerque and the MMA scene and Jackson Link. So
anytime.
I'm giving you this perspective. I want to pick your brain sometime about your perspective, too.
Anytime. I'd love that. We'll talk soon.
All right.
All right. There he is, Jeff Grammer of the Albuquerque Journal. Great perspective on John Jones and the way he is viewed in his adopted home state of New Mexico. Currently resides in Albuquerque, of course, trains out of there as well. Now, I'm very excited about our next guest. In fact, I am somewhat embarrassed that this is the first time that we speak. I think in 4 years, I checked my text messages, more than 4 years. It's very embarrassing. He is an absolute legend of the game. And when I happened to stumble upon the fact that he was training Dominic Reyes for this fight, I knew I wanted to talk to him about this fight. He is the one and only Dan Henderson, and he's kind enough to join us on this Wednesday morning in California. Dan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Long time no speak, Dan. How's life?
Oh, life's good. Just staying pretty busy and plugging away.
What does busy mean to you? What are you up to these days?
Well, I've been, obviously I have my gym and coaching and have my kids that keep me a little bit busy, but I've also been working on a project I'm putting in. The building next door to my gym is a big restaurant, brewery, distillery.
Oh, wow. Okay, so retirement life treating you well? You're happy with it?
Yeah, I can't complain at all. Just, you know, I'm enjoying life for sure.
Do you ever get the itch sometimes? I miss it. One more fight.
Not really.
Okay.
No, I mean, you know, maybe I miss the competition a little bit, but not the preparation
right.
For sure.
And how's the body holding up physically?
Body feels good. I mean, my body was fine when I retired. It just, that was more about not recovering as well as I used to and having to spend a lot more time laying on the couch after practice and not spending time with the family.
Right. Well, it's great to have you on, and it's good timing, of course. True or false, you have been working with Dominic, right, leading up to this fight?
Yeah, his last two or three training camps are between fights also. He comes down about once, sometimes twice a week, mostly come down and spar with the guys at my gym.
So this isn't the first camp that you work with him. It's been two or three, you say?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, definitely for Ovince and Weidman.
Has he improved a lot since you started working with him? And if so, in what capacity?
Well, I don't know if you could accredit that to me, but yeah, he's young and he's athletic and he really is loves the sport enough to listen to people and learn. He's very coachable and definitely takes it all in, soaks it in and works on new things and definitely tries to improve himself.
He's relatively young in the game. When you found out that he'd be fighting John Jones, did you think that this was the right time to do that, or did you think it was a little too soon?
Why are you putting me on the spot like that?
I don't know. I just...
initially, I thought it was a little bit too soon. I mean, I would have preferred him to kind of get maybe one or two more fights in and you know, a little more experience. But yeah, during this training camp, I think I definitely have changed my thoughts on that. And you know, I definitely think he's going to surprise John Jones for sure.
A couple things that John has said about him that I wanted to get your take on. The first was, you know, when people fight him, just getting to the fight in his mind is the celebration, right? You're so taken by the moment. It's such a big deal. And then, of course, he's been there so many times in the past. This is old hat for him. Do you get the sense from Dominic that he's just kind of happy to be there? And is there any concern that the moment you've been on this stage many times before, as much as anyone, is there any concern that the moment will be too big for him?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's one thing about Dominic is, you know, you have certain guys that look a certain way in practice and training and then they go out into a competition and don't perform the way they should or could, or have potential to do. And Dominic's one of the ones that is pretty much the opposite. He looks pretty good in training and you're pretty confident with it, but he always performs even at a higher level and definitely puts it all out there. And you know, so mentally, I think he's always ready to fight and always ready to perform and do what he's supposed to do and follow the game plan. You know, since I've been around him and watching him in practice and kind of help formulating a game plan, he's really follows it well and very coachable. So, you know, I think mentally, I don't think that'll be an issue. But yes, I've seen that not just against John Jones, but against other fighters as well. That people get out there and get in the cage with them, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, kind of don't perform the way they should or could.
John said something a couple times at the first press conference that they had in mid-December, essentially saying he only has a left hand. We've watched your footage. It's just a left hand, left hand, left hand. If I could avoid that, I'll be fine. And when he said that, I was wondering if Dominic or the team would go back and be like, all right, like now we're just going to have to work on something else. Or maybe it's mind games on his part. He is concerned about our left hand and wants us to work on something else so that we don't use the left hand. How did you guys take the fact that he kept bringing that up?
You know, I honestly don't pay attention to a lot of the press conferences and stuff.
No, come on, Dan. I thought you loved that stuff.
So this is the first time hearing of it.
Oh, wow.
I just think that we didn't even care what John Jones thinks. You know, it's more about prepping and your own game plan and making sure that, you know, Dominic controls the fight and puts the fight where he wants it to go and not let John Jones control the pace. So I think, you know, obviously because John Jones knows that Dominic has a left hand, that doesn't mean he's not going to throw the left hand. I mean, I've been hearing that for years about myself and my right hand. So it doesn't do me any good not to try to throw it, and typically it still lands. So, you know, I think Dominic has a lot more tools than what John Jones gives him credit for. You know, which is definitely the Dominic's advantage.
In your opinion, what is the key to defeating John Jones? What do you have to do in this fight, especially early, to dictate the pace?
You know, I think with anybody, they just need to kind of not let John Jones control the pace and not let John Jones, you know, stand there and pick you apart and put the fight where he wants it to be. You got to kind of make him uncomfortable, make him test his cardio a little bit and push the pace without obviously walking into something dumb, but, you know, just kind of stay in his face and make him fight you.
There is some kind of theory out there. There are some people who believe that he's actually slowing down, that he hasn't looked as impressive as of late. He didn't finish Santos. People were booing him, didn't show killer instinct, and let Anthony Smith hang around as well in their fight back in March. Do you subscribe to that notion as well? Do you think that he has kind of slowed down a little bit and this is the perfect time to pick him off?
Well, I definitely think that physically and, you know, I guess that accounts for looking how he fights as well. He definitely hasn't looked the same since his last positive drug test. He definitely doesn't want to get popped again. And, you know, it's noticeable, I think, in his performance.
So you do believe that he was using when he was on top?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, there are some people who believe, you know, it was a sexual enhancement pill and it was a mistake. But you think that this was a conscious effort?
You don't get cut two or three times.
Right.
he just kind of got a gift and a slap on the wrist. I don't think if it was anyone else, it would have been so lenient.
Do you think that there is a noticeable difference in his fighting ability now, or is it just the body?
Well, I think his cardio isn't what it used to be. I think, especially since someone in the industry kind of got popped for EPO, mm-hmm. you know, that might be a concern, and it's a noticeable difference, among other things. But I just think he's kind of playing on a level playing field a little more now, and, you know, it shows.
There's also a theory out there that he struggles against taller fighters, right? Dominic Reyes, tall fighter, 6'4". I mean, he can hang with him as far as the reach is concerned, as far as the height is concerned. Do you believe that to be true as well?
Well, I think a lot of the taller fighters out there have trouble with other taller fighters. They get kind of in bad habits because they're hard to get touched sometimes. They can kind of lean back and get their head out of the way pretty easy and not keep their hands up in the right way and just not be as defensive as they in the right way that a shorter guy normally has to do. But, you know, with that being said, I think, he has trouble with a few things. Taller guys are one of them, and fighting backwards is definitely one of them as well.
Now, will you be in his corner on Saturday?
No, I will not. I'm going to be watching it on TV and hanging out at home with the kids. So, but I'm pretty excited about it.
Was there any discussion of you cornering him?
Not really. Not a whole lot. I mean, he has his other coaches that he's had for a while, and I'm just there to help out. And, you know, he's getting me motivated to try to stay in shape a little bit to not get so chubby. So, yeah. You know, I've been in there sparring with him about once a week for the last two or three training camps, and it's good. So other than I need to get out there and help Sam a little more now too. He's got a fight coming up. So I'm going to try to keep that going.
Wait a second. You're actually sparring with him?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How many rounds?
Typically it's about one with him. He's got a few guys in there, so I'll go around with him, and I go with other guys too, Sam and some of our other guys that are coming up.
49 years young, Dan Henderson sparring with number one contender in the light heavyweight division. That's amazing. Well done.
Yeah, I suck air a little bit, but, you know, as long as I don't get tired, I do fine.
Let me ask you, how often do you think about UFC 151 and the opportunity that was there? You could have been the guy to beat John Jones. You land that H-bomb, this whole thing is not a thing anymore.
Well, I don't typically think about it very often, but when the subject does come up, it does bum me out that I didn't get that opportunity, because I know in my heart and 100% I would have beat him up. I mean, I was the most ready for that fight than I had ever been in my life. So, it's unfortunate, but, you know, you can't live your life on the what ifs.
Right. Would you take Would it like maybe soften that blow a little bit, take some solace in the fact that you will have prepared the guy to beat John Jones? I know it doesn't take away that opportunity. You wanted to do it yourself. But it would be quite the story if, in the end, you prepared the guy to beat him.
I just hope the best for Dominic. It's nothing about me, and it's not going to make me feel vindicated in any other way. But, you know, I just wish the best for Dominic, and he works hard, and he's a good kid and very athletic, and I think he's ready to take on the role of being the champ.
Do you have a prediction? Do you foresee a particular way that this fight ends?
Well, I mean, obviously Dominic has proven that he's able to knock guys out in that first round. But, you know, I think he's got a pretty good chance of beating Jones up in maybe around the fourth or fifth round. His cardio is pretty damn good.
Interesting. Okay. And last thing for you, Dan, I'm just wondering, like, do you still watch MMA? Are you still a fan of the sport? Are you still in tune with what's going on? Or have you taken a bit of a break now in retirement?
I do not watch as much as I used to. You know, it's a little bit more difficult to watch sometimes with everything streaming online now. And yeah, I definitely still watch certain fights. I don't know half of the fighters out there nowadays. There's so many new guys, and I try to keep track of some of them. You know, between the UFC and Bellator, there's one or two fights every week.
Right. Yeah, there is a lot. It's changed a lot since you were around, but I'm happy to hear that you're still involved in the sport. And when I saw this, I saw a particular picture of you and Joe Stevenson next to Dominic. I was like, wow, this is really cool. And a cool story considering your ties to John in the past. I appreciate you doing this, Dan. I was really happy that you wrote back to me. Sometimes it's hit or miss, so I'm not sure. I didn't know if that was still your same old phone number from all those years ago. So great to hear from you. Great to talk to you, and good luck to you and the team this Saturday, and good luck to you, you know, in retirement and everything that you're doing back home as far as your businesses are concerned.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Anytime. Let me know.
All right. Thank you so much. There he is, the one and only Dan Henderson. How cool is that? Dan Hendo Henderson, absolute legend of the game. And I hope that you newer fans know about what that man is all about and what he did in this sport and the moments that he had and the victories that he had and the big fights that he was a part in. You know, he wasn't able to fight John Jones. He never got that opportunity at UFC 151, and that was a shame, but this man has had his fair share of legendary nights in the sport, and really great to hear from him again and to catch up again and to talk about this big fight. So that's the perspective as far as John Jones is concerned in Albuquerque. That's the Dominic Reyes perspective. Now let's get a little taste of the scene in H-Town right now. Let's say hello to my old pal Mark Ormundi, who is on location in Clutch City as we speak. And true or false, Mark, this is your first time in the great state of Texas. Is that accurate?
That would be false, Ariel. I have been to Texas before, but I've never been to the great city of Houston before. This is my first time in Houston. I've been to Dallas.
Okay.
I've been to San Antonio.
Okay.
Remember that Cub Swanson versus Jeremy Stevens card way back when?
Why'd you go to that one?
I went to that one. I did.
Why?
But I've not been to H-Town. Why did I go to that one?
Yeah.
Because it's my job, Ariel. God.
Cub Swanson, Jeremy Stevens, fight night card?
That was a banger.
Okay, fine.
Blockbuster.
This was during your Fox days, wasn't it?
Correct.
All right. Now it makes sense. Now it makes sense. Okay, for some reason, I thought you said first time in Texas. Now it makes a lot more sense.
No.
First time in Houston, H-Town, Clutch City. What do you think of it so far?
Well, I just had some chicken and waffles.
Ooh.
From the Breakfast Club, recommended to me by UFC matchmaker extraordinaire Mick Maynard.
Yes,
and
it was resident.
Fantastic.
Wow,
fantastic stuff. So far so good, I would say.
Any kind of buzz, or a little too early for that?
A little too early. I've spoken to some Uber and Lyft drivers, and none of them were aware that there was any UFC on Saturday. Although one of them was a UFC fan, but he didn't know there was a UFC here on Saturday, so that's not really a great sign.
Yeah, but Wednesday's still a little early. Like Thursday night, Friday's when you really start to get the you know, the sense of how excited the market is and how big of a deal this is there. Do you share my sentiment here? Even though it may not be, you know, the biggest name opponent, anytime John Jones fights, it feels a little more special, right? It just feels different. And especially this one, he's on the verge of making history. He can win 14 fights for a UFC title. That's a big deal. But it just has a bit of a different buzz to it, right? At least for me personally. How about you?
I've always felt that way, you know, going back years, Ariel, because we don't, I don't want to say we don't often see greatness in the sport, because we do see greatness in MMA fairly often, but we have never seen the greatness that John Jones has brought to the octagon. To me, that's a plain fact. It's indisputable. He's the greatest MMA fighter of all time. Say what you will about drug test failures, and I know there are other fighters who have a lot of accolades, but for my money, it's John Jones, and it has been for quite some time. And I cherish every opportunity I get to see him fight, because he is a true master of his craft. And look, the guy has never truly been beaten. His only loss is by disqualification. And look, I mean, this may be, I don't know if this is a hot take or it's not, but eventually John Jones will probably lose a fight. So, I mean, during this time where we're watching him and cherishing the fact that he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time, something in the back of your mind is like, is this going to be the time when he finally, you know, when that streak gets broken? It's been forever. He's never lost, really. 2009 was his only real, I mean, his only quote-unquote loss to Matt Hamill. But, I mean, I think the time is ticking. He's getting a little bit older. I don't know if it's going to happen on Saturday. But, I mean, right? Am I crazy to think that eventually every MMA fighter does actually lose a fight?
No, absolutely. And I mean, maybe not Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's not trending. But, yes, everyone at some point loses.
True.
GSP avenged his two losses and didn't lose for a very long time. 2009, off the top of my head, I think was his last loss. So yes, absolutely. And I still, like, I find it interesting having a John Jones card right after a Conor McGregor card, back to back pay-per-views, because here's Conor, who is not a champion, who isn't, at least right now, considered one of the best ever. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's right. Who knows? But the biggest star in the sport, the biggest draw. Yesterday, you know, we get information from CEO of Disney, Bob Iger, about how great that pay-per-view did. And now you have John Jones, who in many people's eyes is the greatest ever, who's on the verge of all kinds of history and all this stuff. And like, even when I'd read the comments about my interview with him, people are like, ah, this guy, he's a cheater. Like, I just feel like, I don't know, the fans have a very strange relationship towards him. Like, even when he says, the storm is behind me, no one believes him, right? Or 95% of the people don't believe him. I don't know if they're numb to him, or maybe they're just kind of tired of the same old stories, or I'm back and I've learned from my mistakes. But I do feel like the fans are reluctant to truly get behind him. Do you get that feeling as well?
I mean, I think that's been the story, one of the stories of John Jones' career. I don't know if he's ever really had the MMA fan base completely behind him, and he has not been able to drum up that casual fan support that a Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey was able to drum up for themselves for whatever reason. I mean, there are a multitude of reasons that you could say that John Jones was never able to do that. I think that right now for him, I think the problem, and I mean, it's not really a problem, is that he doesn't have a great foil. He had it in Daniel Cormier. It seems like that rivalry is now gone and done. And right now, you know, he beat Alexander Gustafsson, beat Anthony Smith, beat Thiago Santos. These aren't big names. They're not. I don't think people see them as credible rivals for one of the greatest of all time in Jon Jones. Whereas Dan Cormier was that. Maybe, you know, a Rashad Evans was that. They had that you know, personal feud. The Rampage Jackson, there was that personal thing there. There isn't really anyone who people kind of put right there with Jones, and maybe that'll be next. Maybe that'll be after this. But I think he needs that right now for you know, the more casual audience to kind of connect with him again.
If he wins on Saturday, do you think his next fight is at heavyweight?
I do, unless there's some kind of compelling fight for him that doesn't make sense, that, you know, that is not apparent right now going into this fight against Reyes, if that makes any sense. I think it'll be at heavyweight, you know, unless Israel Adesanya is going to move up to light heavyweight next after the Romero fight and fight Jones. I don't know if that's realistic. I don't think it is. But yeah, I think Jones needs something. I think he knows it too. I think the UFC knows it. All due respect to Dominic Reyes, and, you know, we could be talking about Dominic Reyes, you know, beating John Jones' incredible, you know, title defense streak on Saturday. But as of right now, if you're asking me about, you know, the future of Jones and, you know, what can he do to kind of, you know, get hot again in terms of like fan interest. I think that the move to heavyweight is probably one of those things.
So here's how I mapped it out this morning on ESPN.com. If he wins on Saturday, I say he comes back very quickly, May or June, probably June, because May is the Brazil pay-per-view, and fights the winner of Corey Anderson versus Jan Blachowicz. That's happening right in 7 days. And so the timing is perfect. And really, if you look at the division, now that Johnny Walker lost, like, those are really the last two guys left that can make some kind of case. And especially Anderson, who's been poking him and been very vocal. If he wins, and especially if he wins impressively, which I would suggest to him to try to win decisively so that, you know, everyone's kind of clamoring for you to fight John. Take that fight and buy yourself some time for the UFC to book Stipe versus DC 3. Get that over and done with, hopefully July, August, September or so, and then try to make your heavyweight debut Madison Square Garden in November. End the year with three fights and end the year fighting in the heavyweight division. I feel like that would be the perfect 2020 for John Jones.
I mean, all of that sounds great on paper. I mean, there's so many question marks, though, especially with Stipe and DC, though, right?
Right.
So we don't know when that fight's going to happen. And could he, I mean, is John Jones at MSG in November against the winner of that fight realistic? We don't know when that fight's going to be. I mean, if it's in July, maybe, you know,
but
if
also,
it's in August, September.
But also, if DC wins, he may vacate the title and just retire, right?
Right.
Which would be kind of a shame because we'd be on the verge of one of the biggest fights ever.
Right. And I wonder how that would play out. It's going to be interesting. I mean, so then you do like Jones and Ngannou at MSG. I mean, that would be massive.
That would be massive. I think John fighting anyone at heavyweight would be of great interest. And then the other thing, of course, is like, can he stay out of trouble for a whole year? You know, the first half of 2019 was great. And then we had the incident at the Gentleman's Club, which was not great. And we thought maybe that, we'd be back to the old John Jones, and he seems to have avoided any serious repercussions there. And so now here he is fighting in February. And I almost feel bad talking about this in this way because I really do feel like Dominic Reyes isn't getting enough respect. Like, I think he has a shot. Do I think he'll pull off the upset? I don't know. I mean, it's still John Jones, and he hasn't given us much indication that he is, you know, a lesser fighter than he once was. I know that's kind of a theme going into this fight, but
right,
he's still John Jones. Do you give Dominic a chance, or do you think that this is somewhat of a easy pick?
I give him a chance. I certainly anyone has a chance in the UFC. Everyone is pretty elite in the UFC, and he's earned his shot at this title. It's just gonna be a hard road for him because, I mean, on paper it seems like Jones has every advantage outside of maybe just a power advantage. People have talked about Reyes's kicks. He does have very good kicks, but we're talking about wrestling, talking about grappling, we're talking about just seasoning, just experience level at the very highest, you know, point of the UFC. And Jones has that in spades. So, he has a shot, but it certainly seems like he's behind the eight ball going in on many, many levels.
Do you get the sense this is something that John has brought up that, like, he's just happy to be there? Like, you know, you were in front of him, right? You were at the scrum in LA just last week, less than a week ago. And
yes,
John was talking about he's taking pictures of himself on the Sports Center marquee. And for him, just being here, getting this title fight is his touchdown. Did you get the sense being in front of him that he's just happy to be there?
I don't. I think he's someone who has been an athlete his entire life. He's been a competitor his entire life. And someone like that, this is his first rodeo. And I'm sure that when John Jones got his first title fight against Shogun Hua in Newark way back when in 2011, he was probably doing the same thing. He was probably taking a picture of himself on the marquee and so on and so forth. And now, of course, we know what happened from there. I don't think Reyes is like that. I think that, first of all, this is not someone who's been a journeyman, who's been around, who, you know, is kind of getting his courtesy title shot. This is a guy who's undefeated. He's a prospect. I mean, that word gets overused, but I mean, he's an undefeated guy. He's, you know, I think he's either 29 or 30. He's not, you know, he's fairly young still in his prime. So I think that he is going out there with the intention of winning and knocking off John Jones. And by the way, I feel like, you know, all these conversations that people have about John Jones nowadays, I feel like people, you know, forget just how damn good he has been and how damn consistent he's been. I mean, he's been champion. I mean, I know there are some starts and stuff, but for most accounts, he has not lost a title fight you know, since he won the belt in 2011. I mean, that's incredible consistency.
Yes, amazing. And I referenced that photo in Toronto before UFC 129, and he's on the stage with GSP and Jose Aldo and Dominic Cruz and Anderson Silva. And none of those guys are champions anymore, and
no.
The majority of them are nowhere near title fights. Oh, well, Aldo is somehow fighting for a belt in May on a two-fight losing streak, but that's another story for another day. It's really incredible, and considering all the stuff that he has been through, that he has put on himself, the self-inflicted wounds, so to speak, it's incredible that he's still here as a champion. Now, this is a fun debate that's come up this week, and we talked about it on Arrow and the Bad Guys. Well, I want to ask you, what would be a bigger upset in your mind, Reyes beating Jones or Caitlin Chookagian beating Valentina Shevchenko for the women's 125 title?
That's a good question. I think I would say Reyes beating Jones, just for the simple fact that Jones has been doing it for so long. I mean, again, to me, he is the best of all time. So it would be a shocking victory for Reyes, who, you know, is still kind of a guy who's not well known even in MMA circles. So I think that would be bigger just on that scale of things. Although, I mean, Shevchenko is so good; she's just not nearly as established as a champion. The way that Jones is, so that's probably what I would say.
I think Shevchenko losing is a bigger deal. Honestly, I think the gap between
it's not a bigger deal,
but it was a more surprising result, I should say.
That I understand where you're coming from, because I think that Shevchenko is a dominant champion, but if you're asking me who has the harder path to victory, I would probably say Caitlin Chookagian, even though I think Reyes also has a pretty hard path to victory. But as far as like the scope of it, I think Reyes beating Jones is a bigger upset in that way.
Yeah, a bigger story. Yes, right. I shouldn't say bigger deal per se, but I do think the gap is bigger. She's currently a plus 750 according to our stats and info.
Yeah,
and Jessica Eye, by the way, was a plus 800 going into their title fight back in June. Betch Kohea was a plus 850 going into the Ronda Rousey fight at 190. Other people that were plus 800s, other title contenders that were plus 800s, Alexis Davis against Ronda Rousey, Chris Karrueche against DJ, Valerie Letourneau against Ronda, against Joanna Jędrzejczyk on the Ronda Holly Holm card, Yana Kunitskaya against Chris Cyborg. So those are a few other names, and none of them won. So this would be a pretty big deal in its own right. And
I mean, I'm comfortable saying that Valentina Shevchenko is one of the best women's MMA fighters of all time already.
Yeah.
I'm already comfortable saying that. So, I mean, certainly that would be a massive upset.
I'm comfortable. Look, I don't know why it was such a big deal when the UFC split the men and women pound for pound list. I've always done it that way, but I would strongly argue that she's one of the best fighters on the planet right now, regardless of gender. And I don't think there's 100%. Much of an argument there.
I don't think many male fighters would disagree. I mean, just like pound for pound, technique for technique, right? I mean, who is a better pure striker than Valentina Shevchenko? I mean, as far as just the technique goes, as far as just you know, her ability in that way. I mean, it's hard to envision. I mean, just look at, you know, what Amanda Nunes did to Chris Cyborg, did to Holly Holm, and then look at her fights against Valentina Shevchenko. Very different.
Yes. Mark has a great story up on ESPN.com/MMA right now about the pre-fight nerves, anxiety leading up to a big fight. It's a really great read. I love this topic, and I've been talking to a lot of fighters about it. Just spoke to Sergio Pettis and Elliot Marshall about it on my show Monday. As a little preview before you go, which story in particular, there's one that I'm thinking of right now, like just looking at the article, that is just like, wow, this is a crazy statement. But which anecdote from all these fighters, and you spoke to an impressive list of fighters, Kamaru Usman and Donald Cerrone and Caitlin Chookagian and Wonderboy Thompson, and there's Darren Till in there, Masvidal, there's just a bunch of guys. Yeah. Is there one anecdote in particular that really stuck with you?
there are so many good ones, and I really can't thank all those fighters enough for, you know, opening up to me about some, you know, a topic that it's sensitive, and not many people really want to talk about their insecurities like that leading into, you know, a very important event in their lives. I would say Stephen Thompson, probably. I mean, that one stands out to me a lot. I mean, he said that he wishes an asteroid hits, you know, the arena so he doesn't have to fight. I mean, that's like, I mean, it's just funny. I know he watched a lot of anime and like Dragon Ball Z, so maybe that that plays into that. But Kaylin Chikagian, you know, saying that she jokes every fight on the way to the arena, like, oh, I hope the car gets into a crash and we don't have to, you know, I don't have to fight, just that kind of stuff. And then someone like Justin Gaethje saying like, I feel absolutely nothing, like just he's just dead inside going right into a fight, which maybe not too surprising for Justin Gaethje,
right? It's a really great read, and another reason why I love MMA fighters so much, because they're viewed as these tough, strong alpha males, alpha females, and yet they're so open to talking about their feelings and their fears and their anxiety leading up to these fights. So it's a great juxtaposition there, and this story has it all. So well done on the story. I look forward to seeing you in Houston tomorrow, Mark, and I appreciate you taking some time out of your chicken and waffles to join us this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Ariel.
All right. There he is, Mark Raimondi of ESPN, setting the scene for UFC 247 in Houston. I'll be there tomorrow, Thursday, to kick off our coverage at Media Day, and then the weigh-ins on Friday, and then, of course, the event. Also, we're having our pre-fight radio show, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. They won't put that on the full screen during my Monday show, but rest assured, I'll be taking your calls, and we'll have some special guests join us as well. But now, everyone's favorite segment of the week.
GST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Hello, sir.
Hey, Ariel. I like that little shot you took at Corporate Jake there.
Well, I mean, how many times? I've been doing this radio show for a little over a year now, and I still can't get on the full screen.
I know. No love for us in the audio business.
It's amazing. You know, these TV guys sometimes, they have a little bit of a, I don't know, they have a bit of an ego when it comes to what they do compared to the radio people. And I like to try to bridge the gap. I like everyone to be on the same team. We're all in this together. We're all trying to grow the sport of MMA together here at ESPN. And so I feel like all platforms should be recognized.
Everything that you just said is very much related to my minimalist tip of the week here. I'm telling you, there's the synergy here. So when I became a minimalist 2-3-ish years ago, I noticed I just became such a better person. My heart was more full. I started just being nicer to everyone and brought more kindness into my life. And in the MMA world, there's a lot of vitriol in all sports, but in the MMA world and in the online community, there's a lot of hate going around. And as a person who doesn't really like hate, I like to spread the love. It made me think about this. So there's this theory out there. It is called the loving kindness theory. And so what it is, Ariel, is that even if you don't know a person, if you've never come across a person in your life, you've never met them, you just wish that person the absolute best. And I do this in several instances in a day, for example, where I may walk by someone in the hall or I have an exchange with someone, whether that is a clerk or whether that is, you know, a customer service person on the other end of the line. And after I'm done with that interaction with that person, I just silently say to myself, you know what? I hope that person has the best day ever. That when that man or woman is driving home today, that they're going home to, you know, two loving children, a loving husband or wife, and that they're just going to have a great night out, maybe go to the movies or something like that. You just wish the absolute best upon other people that you don't even know. And when I started doing that, at a point in my life where I was not too happy, where I needed to make some changes but didn't know how. And that was one of the first changes I made. I read that theory in a book, The Loving Kindness Theory, and I started adopting it and just started wishing the best on people. And by wishing the best on other people, my own experience of life started to improve. And so for anyone out there who, you know, tears other people down to try and make themselves feel better, how about you build other people up to try to make yourself feel better? That works just as well.
Love that. It feels good to give people compliments. It feels good to boost people's confidence and to make them feel good about themselves. And I really do believe that. I couldn't agree more. When you put out that positivity, I feel like the positivity comes towards you. Whatever you want to call it, good karma, whatever. I totally agree with that, 100%. And by the way, I didn't even know that this was your topic. You never tell me what your topics are before the show, but you feel full in the heart when you are good towards other people. So yes, amen, preach. That's a great – I feel like that's a good one if you're a minimalist or not. Like that's just like a good person thing.
Exactly. And I know you may say, oh, minimalism, you're supposed to tell us about how to get rid of things and whatnot. Like, no, that is the first step. People think minimalism is this radical way of being that you just, you know, sit on the floor with candles on, no lights, and you just have nothing in your home. Like, no, that's not what minimalism is. The first step of embracing minimalism is, yes, getting rid of things and experiences and other things in your life that are detrimental, that don't make you better. But beyond that, once you remove things, you start to make other changes in your life and just how to become a better person. Loving kindness theory is one of those things that I adopted.
Amen. Now, along those lines, I believe our review of the week is very positive as well.
Not so much. So Overfiend 715 here has a 1-star review.
Wow.
Ariel.
And, you know, I'm happy that you chose a 1-star review this week because I don't want people to think that we're just picking the 5 stars. I mean, I'm not trying to encourage 1-star reviews, but, you know, we're fully transparent here. Sometimes you got to address the 1-stars.
Amen. So here we go. Last week, Ariel proudly boasted how he inadvertently started the Jones-Evans rivalry by making sure Jones saying he'd fight Evans from his interview made it on the air. What if Helwani never asked Jones that question? Would Evans have left Jackson Wink so quickly, hearing Jones having no problem fighting his mentor on national television? We all can agree, Evans was never the same after he left Jackson Wink, only winning 2 fights after losing to Jones, retiring on a 5-fight losing streak. Since then, going vegan, growing dreadlocks, and considering returning at welterweight in another organization. Are you happy, Ariel? I'm totally trolling. Hope TST reads this on the pod. You guys should have a third podcast, a 45-minute one on Fridays, where you answer questions in the reviews and take calls. Respect.
Wow. I feel like we started out bad, and then we ended in a great spot. This clearly is coming from a quote-unquote casual, because if I would have done that interview back in 2011... as John Jones is preparing to fight Shogun Hua for the belt with the whole Rashad Evans story kind of looming out there, he was the guy who was supposed to fight Shogun. The reason why John Jones got that title fight is because Rashad injured his knee. And so Jones, as awkward as it was, replaced his mentor. And so if I would have done that interview and not asked the question, I should have been fired. Like, quite simply, I should have been let go that day. That was the most obvious of the questions to ask, and that is why I was shocked that they didn't include it in the piece, the 3-minute piece that aired during the pre-fight show. So no, I'm not ashamed. Was I boasting? I don't think I was boasting. I was telling the story about how this thing almost never happened because some guy in some edit room in New York City didn't think that it was newsworthy. I wasn't boasting. Eventually, trust me, it would have come out. The fact that Jones said it was an indication that they were already not on the best of terms, because prior to that, he never wanted to address this, and neither did Rashad. And moments after John beat Shogun at UFC 128, Rashad told me literally minutes later that he was done with Jackson Wink and that he was moving on and going to train in Florida. Now, did he decide that right then and there? No, but, you know, that kind of sealed the deal after John won the fight, and they all made money and they had a good time, and now they're actually, I think, in a pretty good spot. So chill out. I'm not boasting about the divorce of a friendship, if you will. I just thought it was crazy that they didn't include it in the piece, and I saved it with 24 hours left.
Ariel, I always appreciate your MMA history lessons.
Thank you.
Because this is all pre my fandom. But how about that Colby interview this week?
Oh, yes. I know you were. I was thinking of you. I thought that we should have had a camera wherever you sit during the show. I have no idea where you are in some cave, dungeon, little studio, closet. Just you probably just clapping at all the crazy things that he was saying.
I just love your reactions to when he says outlandish stuff. He goes on a rant, last question about John Jones and his past, and you just say, Colby, welcome back.
Yes. Well, I mean, what else is there?
No, just like, there's no other way to handle it.
Listen,
that.
I'll say this about Colby. Say what you will. The man kept his word, told me that he would come on the show first. He would talk to us first. It took some time. And I know some people are pointing to the fact that, hey, he was... you know, he was away for 6 weeks and he claims he didn't have a broken jaw, but, you know, the typical recovery time for a broken jaw is 6 weeks. Just relax with all your conspiracy theories, all right? It's good to have him back. He makes things interesting, and now we'll see where he fits into the welterweight title picture. I don't know if he's going to get that immediate title shot or the rematch. I don't think it's going to happen given his relationship with UFC, given the fact that he wasn't the champion. He's a challenger and the fight ended in the 5th round, but it's going to be an interesting time. Does he fight someone else? Does he sit out and wait? I'm curious to see how it plays out. But for now, we are out of time. TST Tight Ship Troy is running a tight ship. In fact, I'm running a tight ship because I have to run over to do Ariel the Bad Guy right now. And then again, later today, I'm going to be on the Will Cain Show. What am I going to talk about? I'm going to try to throw in as many MMA references throughout the show. Maybe even if it's just like subtle things, like I'm not impressed by Mookie Betts' performance. Just little subtle things for all of you. So see if you can find the Easter eggs, if you will. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. Oh, my man, Stephen A. just gave me a thumbs up. You see that? That's the kind of love we have. Great to end on that note. Stephen A. just gave me a thumbs up through the window here. My man, Stephen A. Me and Stephen A. together taking on all the haters. Come at us, bros. Come at us. Okay, we're out of time. Thank you very much to all our guests today. Thanks to all of you for continuing to download, rate, subscribe, review, all those things and more. And feel free to be generous with your 5-star reviews, all right? 5-star it up. We don't mind. Enough with the 1-stars. Enough with the hatred. Enough with the animosity. The vitriol.
Loving kindness.
Yes. Amen. Thank you very much, Jeff Grammer. Great stuff. Great insight. Thank you very much, Dan Henderson, the legend. TST just learned who he was 15 minutes ago. I'm glad that he is starting to learn his MMA history. We'll be on the radio 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Got a ton of coverage coming your way from Houston. And, of course, I'll be there with Mark Raimondi, Brett Okamoto, and our entire team. For now, though, we are out of time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. I love you. I will talk to you from Houston.